you all for being here. Again, this is a breakout session, so this will be very informal. We'll get off stage in a bit as well, so that we are able to network and communicate with you guys more. I am Sanjana Chantyal, and I'm the project lead of the Youth Solutions Program at SDSN Youth. So the Youth Solutions Program is an entrepreneurship accelerator program for young social entrepreneurs, and we are supporting social entrepreneurs in over 50 countries so that we can scale their sustainable solutions and maximize the reach and impact of their work. I am based in Nepal, and I work at a non-profit think tank that is focused on using finance for social good. I have a finance background. I've worked in private equity and corporate finance in America as well. And in Nepal, I founded various initiatives, including a Stree Shakti project, which focuses on connecting young women to green jobs in Nepal, and I also founded the Next Steps project that is focused on helping young students apply for scholarships and navigate higher education, because for first generation students, this can be a daunting process. So next, I would let my colleague introduce herself.
All right, hi everyone. Hi. Since this is a breakout session, we hope that it's going to be a lot more engaging in comparison to the other sessions. My name is Mana Saza, and I have two hats today. So I represent SOS International. We're working on the Global Green Jobs Youth Pact. And essentially, I just wanted to very briefly introduce about the Green Jobs Youth Pact. It's an initiative that ILO, the UNEP, and UNICEF has worked together with THE to come up with the definition for green skills as well as green jobs. So we're really trying to understand, what do youth think of like the meaning of green jobs and green skills? And this is in order to meet the three green E's that we really want to push forward. One is green employment and entrepreneurship, so we really hope to see more green jobs that will emerge. Secondly would be greening education and skills. And third one is green empowerment and youth engagement. So those are our three emphasis in the green job sector. We're trying to develop 1 million new green jobs, as well as transform 1 million existing roles into green ones. And thirdly, support 10,000 young green entrepreneurs in starting their own business. So this is what the Youth Pact is doing under SOS in collaboration with UNEP, ILO, as well as UNICEF and THE this time. Additionally, I have my own organization called Switch. We're an NPO located in Japan, and we do a lot of climate education as well as biodiversity and city making. So I'm really excited to talk to you guys with what we actually are doing a bit more further, and make sure that you guys are part of the dialogue, because we don't want to be the ones who are just speaking, but we want to hear what your ideas are in supporting young leaders to be the next change makers, or the change makers in their local communities right now. All right, so I know we have a couple of questions that were already given to us, and the first one was, what are some of the main challenges faced by emerging leaders as they seek to implement green skills? So Sanjana, do you want to start with that?
So I think we can both answer these questions, and then we'll take it to the audience for your insights as well, because I guess, again, we want this to be a dialogue and not a monologue. So like I mentioned earlier, I started the Women in Energy project in Nepal, and one of the things that came up is, right, there is a misconception that energy sector is only for engineers. And this misconception is especially harmful because we already have a low representation of women in the engineering field of study. So that misconception leads to lower women thinking that they can pursue a green job in the energy sector. And that is something that we wanted to address. So we were providing training workshop to young women who came from various backgrounds: business, finance, environment, lawyer, any subject that you think of, everyone can contribute to the green economy, to the energy sector, and that is what we focused on. In addition to the training workshop, we also provided mentorship and networking opportunities. And in the education system, if you look at it, right, people don't have the opportunity to interact or collaborate with people from other disciplines. And that is so unlike the real world, where we have to collaborate and work with other people. And if we're not doing that from the very beginning of our learning process, what happens is we are not able to understand the perspective that the other person is bringing. Like if we just think about maybe designing a city, right? The engineer might be thinking only from an engineering perspective, but then we have the women rights organization who might be talking about how safe cities should be embedded and how a GBV lens, a gender-based violence lens, must be embedded as well. And environmentalists might talk about how the trees should not be cut down when the city are being made. So even a small project that you think of, every field of study has something to contribute to it. And if we're always working in a siloed environment where we do not understand the perspective that the other field of discipline can bring to the table, there is no room for collaboration, and it almost becomes a competition where people are not really working together. And that is something that we wanted to address. So in our training workshops, we provided training on various topics such as human rights to the young women as well, to ensure that they have a holistic perspective of the energy sector. And mentorship was a key element as well. And we invited women leaders from the energy sector to encourage the young women, right? And what we found out is that the invitation to the existing women leaders was encouraging not only to the young women, but to the older leaders as well. Because it was one of the few instances where they were looked as key stakeholders and their expertise was valued. A lot of them expressed that they were not really invited to platforms to share their experience and expertise. So when our focus was to encourage young women leaders, the gap that we recognized is that the existing women leaders in the energy field of industry, they feel like their value and expertise is not there, right? So that was a problem that we identified when we're trying to solve another problem. So it's very important for us to see that every stakeholder of the ecosystem should feel like they can contribute to the green economy, to the energy sector. So that was a problem that we identified as we were implementing a program. So any thoughts on yours?
Thank you, Sanjana. I think I really like the fact that you mentioned the holistic perspective, because you identified that there still is a stereotyping around green jobs and green skilling, which is very environment-related, engineering, water management, city planning. But in reality, for example, I think that every job should be a green job. So the dialogue should be around what are the existing inefficiencies and management issues that are not addressing the Paris Agreement, and how can we change that? So there needs to be a greater dialogue in what is the objective that we're all trying to meet. For example, if everyone in the world lived like an average Thai person, it's said to take up 1.5 Earth's worth of resources, but we only have one Earth. So how do we make sure that we're reducing the amount of resource and energy from 1.5 to one Earth? It's very simple when you think it that way. So I think it's a narrative of sharing that communication as to why we're doing it and bringing together all the stakeholders to meet that agreement as well. So because we do want to make this as engaging as possible, if it's possible, could you turn to the person on your right and talk about what do you feel like is a hurdle that you're facing in order to implement green jobs or green skilling? If you haven't heard of it, that's totally fine. Think of how do you implement more environmental skills within your work currently, and what are some of the hurdles that you're facing? So I'm just going to give you 1 minute, and we're going to go around the table to ask some questions, pick up some comments as well. So I'll give you 1 minute for that. I see some people who might be shy in the corner. It would be great if you could stand up and move your seat to the side. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I think we're coming to a close in around 15 seconds. So just wrap up your conversation right now.
Thank you all for your discussions. Yep. Now, let's take your small group discussion to the bigger group. So any volunteers on, okay, we have one volunteer right here.
We have been discussing about like what we do, what we take up at our local place. So I'm from Hyderabad. I'm a professor representing Amjad Ali Khan College of Business Management, India. During my daily course of time, what I do is, right from pandemic, we had to maintain distance, right? So at the terrace, I made my individual community members to come and practice yoga. I'm a yoga trainer. And yoga and meditation trainer. So I've been giving them, and still that is being continued till today. Every morning, sun salutation we do. At least, if not in a bigger way, but early in the morning, 5:30 to 6:30, if it is raining under the roof, we do that yoga practice. During pandemic, we followed all pandemic norms, and I have made them to transform themselves from the stress, tension. It is for well-being, because most of the people were under stress because of job loss and also the kind of fear within themselves that next, you know, if we hear about during that time, next in 500 meters there is a COVID patient, people used to get feared and they were in great tension. So in order to minimize, yoga and meditation was the best thing for well-being. So it started with that concept, and still today I'm continuing. Sometimes I take sessions online also on yoga postures, you know, sun salutation and even moon salutation, we do that. And apart from that, during Sundays, me and my husband, we try to, you know, clean our community, planting some trees. This is what, cutting the green. Even in India, we have a Swachh Bharat program, wherein we can keep our surroundings clean and we can share the picture. We get a certificate of Swachh Bharat Abhiyan. So this is what we normally do for sustainability. Thank you. Yep.
Thank you for highlighting the actions individuals can take to support sustainable development. Any other volunteers? Okay, we have a volunteer right there.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. I'm supposed to be a speaker today, but now I'm an audience. But anyways, I'm going to ask the question. Through my interactions with, what's your name? Grace, right? She's a lecturer at ITB, which is in Bandung, Indonesia. So I learned that everybody has a different definition of green job. So instead of trying to find out what green job is, why don't, you know, the industries and universities, think tanks, they should focus on making existing job more green, so that you don't have the kind of green divide that we have today, right? So there should be some mindset shift in the idea of practicing green jobs. So I think that's a very important point. Yep.
Thank you so much for showing how the existing structure that we have, again, that, you know, can be green as in itself as well. And we don't need to introduce new jobs as green jobs. The existing jobs can be green. That's a great insight. So anyone else, any volunteers? Yes.
Hi, hi everyone. I'm Jia from Malaysia. Our team here, we were discussing the last point I thought was pretty interesting. Whether it's on green jobs, I think, or green skills, one of the biggest problems, as our team member here has mentioned, was the market demand and the businesses who are very interested to have immediate results. So the need for immediate solutions, immediate things in order to report my sustainability impact, my transitioning from energy to renewable. But however, if we are talking about emerging leaders or education of green skills, they need the space to create and transform and explore. But business leaders or business recruiters, when they want to hire people with green skills or they want to invest into greening the process, they want immediate solutions rather than funding a R&D kind of approach to find a way out together. So that would be a huge hurdle, I think, the need for immediate results on the ground for the industry and the markets. Yep. So thank you, my team member here, for that point.
Thanks for that. Again, systemic change takes time, right? So the stakeholders of the ecosystem need to be more patient when it comes to the solutions that are being implemented. Any more volunteers? Yep, we have one right here.
Hi, I'm Trang from RMIT Vietnam campus. So during the last 2 days, I learned a lot about green job, green skill, and a lot of things. Like the word sustainability and green skill and green job is very varied. It's really hard to explain in a very simple word. So I think the hurdle is just how to convey the messages in a very simple way, very practical and direct for everyone in your community in order to know easier. For example, yesterday when Minas have a section, I come about how many earth that Thailand need to have, and then at the end of the session, I come straight to her and say, "Hey, how can I know like how many earth that Vietnam need to have? Is it 1.4? Luckily, it's just a little bit less than. But I think things like very symbolize that earth people to want to learn more, want to do something. It's very simple way like that. And when we discussed, we also mentioned about when you think about green skill or green job, but in during the practical side, when everything green is related to expensive. So when we want to reduce things or we want to use sustainable products, it's like the rise is triple or double or triple compared with the normal ones, and it's really hard to inspire the student or if you don't have a big fund in order to practice that. So I think there are lots of hurdles, but we have to express and practice together. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that answer. Like, we had another session here in this room earlier, and they mentioned that common sense is a green skill as well, right? Just do less polluting of the world. That's a very common sense that is not as common as it was discussed. So I really like the idea of you saying that we need to make things simple. If we make the idea of green economy complicated, then we will have less engagement. And if it's expensive to do things in a green way, then again, we'll have less engagement. So how can we make things more easier to understand so that we can incorporate more individuals and more stakeholders of the ecosystem as we transition to green economy? Any more volunteers? Yes.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. So my name is Angelica from the Philippines. So I'm part of a corporate social responsibility team of our organization. So one of the things that I can share with you is we have this project for external communities. So remember, when we do green skills, we don't just promote projects for our employees. We also include all the communities surrounding it. So during the World Environment Day celebration, actually it was just last week, so usually corporates just donate stuff to different sectors, but they're forgetting that it's very important to capacitate them first. So what we did to the farmers of our communities, we helped them tap them to an expert in regenerative agriculture, because let's remember that traditional farming really is something that they are more familiar with, but they don't know that it degrades the soil, especially if they use pesticides, fungicides, and others. So it's very important that at their level, there are people who will share them that there's another ways to conduct farming that is healthy for the soil and for the environment. And that's the biodynamic farming and other types of farming that doesn't just use fertilizers to have these products in the farms, but also to regenerate the soil. That's very important. So capacity building, it's very important for the community. So thank you.
Thank you for highlighting that as well, right? Again, sometimes people might use practices that are harmful to the planet, and it's not because they're intentionally doing it. It's because they don't have the information or they don't have the resources to implement green practices. So how do we bridge that gap is very important. And again, make things simple and make things financially more viable as well. Any more volunteers? If not, we'll move to... Yes.
Hi, everyone. You've seen Transformer 1, 2, 3, 4. You're looking at Transformer 5. Okay, the reason because I introduced myself as a transformer, because for the past 15 years, I do a lot of transformation work at government level and corporates. Right, there are different levels. I was from academia, but now I'm from the industry. So I've been chatting with CEOs, HR managers, HR directors, all right, looking at accessibility. So a few things I will share with you. One, all right, this is what I found talking to corporations and even governments, all right, in terms of recruiting for professionals or even fresh graduates. One, many want to do accessibility, but many do not know how to do it. Many want professionals to come in, but when they engage professionals, they were so disappointed, because the skills that they come to the organization, they don't have it, all right? Some have gone through accessibility course, short courses, postgraduate courses, master's courses. But what's lacking in what I found is that the practicum, they don't have real practical experiences. Another one to share with you, I've scanned through the adverts. I'm from Singapore, by the way. All right, I scanned through the adverts in Singapore. Everyone's once looking for accessibility officers, accessibility managers, all right, but they have all these credentials, many would have. But unfortunately, there's one line that will say, minimum 3 years experience. So if you're producing graduates in accessibility, all right, masters or even PhD, yes, you got your PhD, but when you come to the workforce, where's your experience? So this is where I actually scanned through all this. Currently, just to share with you, currently I'm also teaching as an adjunct faculty with Singapore Institute of Management. All right, I'm preparing mid-career switches, preparing people who are in a joking way. I'm tired of my company. I'm tired of my boss. All right, I want to do something different. All right, so I've seen of them. This Saturday, I'm launching for my fourth batch. So far in the 8 months, I got 3 batches already. The profile of this. About 70-80% of them are about 35s to 40s. But you'd be surprised, I have three participants. One was 70-year-old, and the other two were 55. All right? But I'm impressed. I take my hat off. But they were captivated that they want to be in this industry. So looking at this, what's lacking today is their experience. You may have the know-how, but it's how do you apply? Because companies like what you mentioned just now, when they employ the accessibility officer or manager, straight away, I'll give you the department. And normally, accessibility officers or accessibility department is, by designation, is huge. Chief accessibility officer. By physical size, 2% or 3. You don't have. But you have to do everything, anything. So you're wearing many hats. So question is from, I was from academia, now as a from industry, is that what are the skills that you are equipping to these graduates or the people who are going into these areas? And on top of the accessibility content or domain that you need to impart, there are other critical skills that actually you need, which is lacking in our young today. All right. One, the top five skills in accessibility, what they need, critical thinking, sense making, or problem solving. These are little competencies which actually align to the World Economic Forum 2025 skills for the future. All right. So I'm just sharing from experience what I got from insights, not just within Singapore, because I most of my work, actually 90% of my work is outside Singapore. So I'm consultant to a few governments, especially in Africa, all right, and in Middle East. So these are insights that I would like to share to the audience here. What are the challenges that and the expectations from governments, from the corporations? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for sharing that insight. Again, for stakeholder collaboration, it's important that everyone is on the same page, right? And we understand the perspective and the needs that different stakeholders have so that we can come to a collective action and a collective solution. So next, we would want to kind of wrap up the session because we are coming towards the end. So before we do that, we would like to talk about call to action that we have, right? So my colleague here.
Thank you so much. Thank you everyone so much for your comments. We're actually having a feedback time after this breakout session where we're going to share what your thoughts were to the other groups. So it's really nice to hear that we have a variety of information as well as thoughts throughout the processes. And actually, I wasn't really sure if you want to go through it, but we do have like two more questions that you want to quickly answer, and then we can go to the last part. Yeah, okay. So the question was, how can education institutions better support young leaders in building green careers? So one thing that perhaps, for me, for example, I work with a lot of the public sector as well as the private universities, and I realized that most of these education sectors, they don't have a very big press to market the green education per se, because not all the departments believe that it is a necessity. So partially marketing that importance of the green sector is something that I believe needs to happen. So if you are part of the institution making within the education sector, it would be really great to see you guys teach your professors and teachers and department admins as to why we need that green sector to be pushed, and they can find the opportunities for their students to take on that role, because a lot of times it's very focused on specific engineering degrees or the maths and sciences, but we need to see more movement from the other departments as well. Do you have any thoughts around that too?
So something I discussed in the early session as well in the morning is that the curriculum of a university program should not look like a 20-year-old newspaper, right? It should reflect the present and the future. Education should not feel like a history gap. So the dynamic, changing world should be reflected in the education that we are getting as well, so that we are able to design solutions that address the current problems and issues. So for me, I think the one action that needs to happen is that the education that we're getting in universities, in schools and colleges need to reflect the problems that are of pressing need, and we have to equip students with problem-solving skills so that they are able to design solutions to address them. So,
All right, yeah, so I think since we are running out of time, we have 3 minutes. So we both each wanted to propose a call to action for you guys as well and receive feedback on what you guys think you can do. So one thing as to supporting the emerging leaders, what we would love to see happen on the ground is to bring more practical skills. I think the gentleman in the back really suggested that we don't have enough education that is related to practical skills, especially in the green sector. It's more like textbook based, but a lot of the students don't have the provision to work on the ground and actually make a change themselves, whether it be individual or in a group setting. So that really does need to be implemented within each student's curriculum. And if that could be implemented, I think there would be quite a big change. So that's one aspect from me. How about you?
I think it's, again, important to ensure, like, I think a lot of great ideas came from the conversation today, right? The things that we should make things simple, we should make things accessible, and also we need to understand what the employers need so that the students don't feel like they are not equipped with the skills that the employers want, right? Because if that happens, there is high youth unemployment as well. People are not able to pay for a living because they do not find a job. And I think it's very important for us to bridge the gap between the transition from being a student to being a working professional. We need to identify what are the practical skills that employers are looking for, and the education system needs to equip them with those skills. And again, when we talk about being an employee, sometimes we think of someone who just obeys orders and does not have the power to make change, right? So we need to ensure that universities and employers connect and collaborate to ensure that we are creating leaders and not robots who are just following orders and designing solutions to address the issues around us. So with that, I think we're almost at time. Anyone wants to add any last words before we close? If not, we're at time. Any volunteers for any last takeaway from the session? If not, okay. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your insights. I hope that it was good to meet new people, new faces, and learn new things from new context as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Sanjana and Mana, for such an insightful session. For those of you who were interested in the other breakout sessions happening, we've now got a feedback panel starting in a couple of minutes to hear some insights from the other sessions. Please do feel free to stay. This will be a pretty short session followed by a break. Thank you.